You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
The movie, TV movie edition.
Woo! Let's hear that theme song.
Hi.
Hello.
I didn't realize you just came in just to do the theme song and then left, but now you've decided to stay here. I'm not gonna lie,
it's awkward.
We weren't expecting this.
I am here to make sure that everything is in order.
It's not. I gotta pull up my notes. Okay, here we go. Today we're gonna be talking about the television movie, Doctor Who the Movie, which aired in Canada on May 12th, 1996. Then in the U.S. on May 14th, 1996. Then in the U.K. on May 27th, 1996.
True facts!
Oh, wait, not 1999?
Nope.
Okay.
This is a future baby. And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden.
I would say where you can find Matt, but Matt's here.
I am here.
You can find him right the fuck here.
I am here. I am here for the Watchathon of Rassilon, the movie.
These are all the people we've got. We've got the Dalek, who's going to eventually turn into Vince. I swear it.
I am not going to turn into anyone.
The Dalek is going to leave and Vince will take the Dalek's place. We've got Matt Golden.
Hey.
We've got Felicity Cousinets.
Hello.
And we've got Adam James Clegg.
Hello, I'm basically here because I was told Joe would be played by Paul McGann.
Oh, shit, me too.
I actually am Paul McGann. I've just been, like, really in character as Joe for, like, the past 20 minutes, and I nailed it.
I was going to say, like, since Hulanta?
Oh, yeah. We did meet Paul McGann.
Yeah. I assume that's when the two of you switched.
Yes. I've been playing Joe this entire time, and that's why we started this podcast, really, is to promote my feature film. But hey, how are you guys doing?
Well, you know. Pretty good.
Word. That's the mood.
Just watched the TV movie, but you know.
A little context. We just watched the TV movie. I drank during it. I think Felicity drank during it.
I did.
I did not watch a movie.
Vince did not. Or the Dalek.
Dalek
did not watch the movie, nor did Vince. Vincent E.L. I don't think I said their full name. Matt, did you drink?
I watched the movie, did not drink.
Adam, did you drink?
Watching the movie is a bit like drinking.
Fair enough. Tony, what did you drink? What did we drink?
We drank pineapple juice and vodka.
It's delicious. There's something pink in it.
Well, there's a little bit of, what's it called? Grenadine.
Blood?
So that it would... Yeah, there's just a little bit of blood to really bring out the flavors.
I'm just glad it wasn't Master Cum. Felicity, what did you drink?
Margarita-flavored hard seltzer.
Nice.
Nice.
I drank Master Cum.
So we're having wiener-related incidences before we started.
Yeah,
exactly.
And no, I will not explain that.
I drank the primordial ooze of my forefathers!
Hey, disgusting. I don't need to know that.
So I don't think we need to do a big deep dive like we normally do of just discussing the plot in order in detail.
Right off the bat.
I don't think we can.
I have something I want to say.
Yeah. What do you want to say right off the bat?
Paul McGann is so hot in a way that I don't understand as somebody who's not normally attracted to people. That's it. I just wanted to say that.
Oh, quickly. I get it. We met him in person and just...
He walked out of the room and you said, you looked at me with the most, like, starstruck face, and you said, that man has the most beautiful eyes I have ever seen.
He truly does.
He is very lovely and has held up well. I think I remember talking on Modern Undead about how I thought Mark Strickson had held up well, but I don't know what I was thinking about. he didn't look as good in pictures online as he did in my memory, but Paul McGann is looking good.
Mm.
Paul McGann showed me a picture on his phone, which meant I had to stand close enough to see a picture on his phone. And I don't like... it made me feel like...
He leaned on you at one point.
How did he smell? Did he smell good? I imagine he smells good.
Yeah.
Well, when he leaned on you at the like little meet and greet party thing, like right at the beginning, he did smell a little bit like booze.
That's good in my book.
That's interesting, because that's how I imagined Tom Baker would smell, of like cigarettes and whiskey. But I'd imagine Paul McGann would smell of woodland.
What did Colin Baker smell like?
Intimidation.
Theatricality.
I don't know. Colin Baker triggered my fight or flight response so bad.
He was terrifying.
He's not in any way that like he was not in any way that he wasn't like completely nice, but just like him directing any amount of attention towards you is like, oh, this is bad. I need to be out of this situation immediately.
Right. I mean, he has a tendency to strangle people, you know, without warning.
Well, the thing was, is like we were filming him and he just like in a booming, commanding voice, like while towering over us, because he's big dude.
He's a tall motherfucker, yeah.
He just went, "Where do you want me?"
And we were like, God, "Oh shit!" My brain stopped working. Yeah. I was like, "I don't know. Please just, I don't know.
Don't hurt me.
Just say the, just say the words that I need you to say, and then I will leave immediately."
So those are the only two doctors we've met, right? So those are the only two we have even the remotest possibility of knowing what they smell like.
I don't remember what they smell like.
I've met all the living classic doctors as well as Patrick Troughton.
Ooh.
What did they smell like?
That I don't recall.
I bet 1 through 3 don't smell too great right now.
Jesus!
I was going to say, I assume, I hope that you met Patrick Troughton pre-death.
Yeah, I was wondering that.
Not too long. I think it might have been like the same year or a year, year before. It was a fun story because this was my dad, my brother, and I all went to this just kind of like one day thing in New Hampshire. We all dressed up because we thought that's what we have to do. And my dad actually put together a pretty good William Hartnell costume and was like a finalist in the costume contest. But while he was on stage with like the other finalists, this Tom Baker dressed guy like elbowed his way on stage and then like they grabbed his scarf and unraveled him, and it was Patrick Troughton.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
I guess as something of an ignominious claim to fame, Joe and Tony, you are currently recording this podcast from the same state in which Patrick Troughton died.
Oh, Georgia?
He died in Columbus, Georgia.
I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
At the Magnum Opus Con.
Ooh.
Wow.
Do you know, apparently Anthony Ainley found the body? Which, I imagine phoning up, being Anthony Ainley, and going, "It wasn't me."
The doctor's dead.
I'm sure he did a chuckle down the phone. I mean, he probably couldn't help himself, you know.
So should we... Okay, so I think we should give, like, a brief summary of what the movie is.
Could you do that? Depth. I would love to hear it.
All right, here I go.
Somebody just watched it.
Oh, hang on. Just as a side note, Tony, you talked about, like, leaning over his phone and it being just like, you are spellbinding. I have video of him telling Amy that she is a woman of discriminating taste.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I think she stopped breathing.
Yeah, I think she did too.
Just for comparison, I also, at the same job, met Kevin Bacon once and did not give a shit. So I'm... Yeah. I'm not easily, like, rattled by this type of thing. Paul McGann is a special occurrence that I don't understand.
He is a unicorn.
Okay, so here's a brief summary of Doctor Who, the movie. Well, before I do a brief summary, does anybody have titles for this?
I do now.
All right.
My title is Gooigi.
Gooigi?
We had to stop playing Luigi's Mansion for a while because Joe wouldn't stop being rude about Gooigi.
Well, it's not a title I came up with, but I have heard it referred to as Grace 1999, so that's what I like thinking of it as.
Like it. I don't have one.
Then we'll just say you say The Enemy Within.
No, I'd say, I want to say, like, The Jizz of the Master, but...
Mine, based on a sign that I'd never seen in the movie before I watched it this time. It's a Doctor Who mean time. It's time, but it's mean.
But it's mean.
It's mean about it.
I am a Dalek.
What's your title?
Project Extermination Complete.
Mine is Eight is Enough.
Somewhere Richard E. Grant is very sad.
Okay, a summary of this movie.
What happened?
The Seventh Doctor gets the Master's body parts from the Daleks for some reason.
Why did they give it to him?
I don't know. That's too much detail. I'm doing a summary.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It was like the Master's last request.
Okay,
I just feel like the Daleks would be like, fuck you. The Daleks don't do last requests.
Hold on. I need to point out, we have a Dalek here. I think we should ask them.
Okay, you're right.
What the fuck?
What's that about? You guys do last requests?
Only on special occasions.
So you just let the Doctor leave with the Master's body parts?
When it inconveniences him?
You know what? That's super fair.
Yeah, the Daleks probably knew what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. This absolutely tracks. I'm sorry for questioning it.
Ha ha ha, we have punch with the Doctor.
Okay, so he gets them. Okay, so this is the brief summary. Brief.
All right.
The Doctor gets the Master's body parts from the
Why are you saying body parts?
Because that's what I'm saying.
Like it's a they handed him a bag full of limbs.
I don't think I'm gonna get past this part of the summary.
I think they just handed him a big ball of goop and they went, there you go, and he was like, all right.
They give him a chest of goop.
Could you imagine a guy who had to sweep the goo into the chest? That Dalek doesn't get paid enough. Continue.
He just uses his little sucker thing to just goop it out.
That's what the vacuum cleaner attachment is for.
The goop gets out, the TARDIS breaks, the TARDIS lands on Earth in San Francisco, where the Doctor is immediately shot.
That's just what happens when you go to America.
It is.
Yeah. Statistically, I'm surprised he lasted the 3 seconds that he did.
Some gang leader kid named Chang Li takes him to a hospital.
I don't think that kid's ever been the leader of anything.
Did I say leader? I meant member. Member. Gang member. Because he has a gun. I assume he's in a gang.
Stop talking about body parts, Joe.
So, at the hospital, the Doctor briefly meets Grace, who rushes in from an opera to operate on him for some reason, to get the bullets out or to take out his second heart. I don't know. And while he's in the hospital overnight, he dies and regenerates into Paul McGann. It was Sylvester McCoy, now it's Paul McGann. And then the goo has escaped into the ambulance driver that got into the hospital.
His name is Bruce.
Bruce teams up with Chang Li to get the Doctor's lives. And there's a whole thing about time and clocks. Atomic clock.
Bruce gets possessed by the
Bruce gets possessed.
By the Master's.
The Master's comes.
Wait, I now have a title and a theme song for this show. It's They Call Me Bruce, which is a song by Rick Springfield about how people always think he's Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, there's also a movie called They Call Me Bruce. It's like a comedy kung fu thing. This guy doesn't know kung fu, but he looks like Bruce Lee. And there's a sequel called They Still Call Me Bruce.
They just don't stop.
But who doesn't love a goop snake?
Oh! Hey! Vince! Welcome to the podcast, pal.
Hi, I'm a little late. I don't really know what I'm going to contribute. I have also not watched this movie today, but I have watched it twice in the past, and I have terrible memory. But I do remember there was a goop snake.
Yes, goop snake.
Am I right?
Yeah.
There was a goop snake.
Yeah, who doesn't love a goop snake? It's the pet of the year, of the holidays. Everybody wants a goop snake.
But
that's my favorite song.
Once the Master teams up with Chang Li and the Doctor teams up with Grace, there's a whole big complicated plot about time and an atomic clock and everything, and I don't fully understand it, but the Master's trying to get the Doctor's lives.
Literally none of the plot makes any sense.
No, that's it. The Doctor saves the day at the end, and everybody dies and comes back, and it's all groovy.
There's the Eye of Harmony.
Well, the plot is beside the point. This is a precursor to Russell T. Davis finales, where the plot is kind of like a tertiary thing that's just kind of there to move things along. But what it's really about is the characters feeling things and acting on those feelings.
I was seeing strange parallels between this and The Last of the Time Lords, including like the Doctor trying at the last minute to save the Master and the Master letting
this
go.
This movie is about the aesthetics.
But those aesthetics are great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This movie looks great.
The TARDIS interior is my favorite.
Yes, TARDIS looks great. I would say the CGI is questionable.
That's fair. Especially all the goo.
Too much goo.
I like the TARDIS interior, but I don't really like the console. I find the console's a bit meh, if I'm being honest. But I do like the size.
It is a little low-tech.
Yeah, a bit too low-tech, I think.
I kind of like the console in the scenes where it kind of frames the Doctor's and Grace's faces as they're talking to each other. I think that part works well.
This TARDIS feels like a precursor to the first Matt Smith TARDIS.
It's kind of steampunky before steampunk was really a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got a lot of like tactileness.
I think steampunk was a thing pretty early on with things like Jules Verne.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That is
so true. Like,
it wasn't called that. I don't know when they.
Well, I think it became called that as a response to cyberpunk.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Oh yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Cyberpunk was the 90s though, right?
80s is when the cyberpunk aesthetic really kicked in.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Neuromancer. Is that what?
Yeah, Neuromancer is kind of considered to be like the pioneer of it. Neuromancer, Blade Runner.
Well, yeah, Blade Runner was early 80s.
Yeah, Blade Runner was 82. I am the age of Blade Runner.
Congrats.
Oh, I'm a lot older than that. I just turned 51. Actually, the...
Happy birthday.
Thank you. The Canadian and U.S. air dates bookmark my birthday because my birthday is the 13th.
Oh, right in between, huh?
So yeah, I got to watch this the day after my birthday.
Mine is the 10th.
Well, happy belated birthday.
Happy belated birthday to you.
Yours is the 1st.
Lots of May birthdays.
Yes.
Yeah.
May birthdays are the best.
May we all have good birthdays.
Jesus Christ.
I know. I'm sorry.
Podcast canceled.
Jesus.
Everyone go home.
Can we just restart?
Hi, I'm Joe, and I'm Tony.
Let's spend more time on the cum chest.
Ugh. Ugh. There is so much cum in this.
I do want to say, before we get into that.
There's more ejaculation here than on Mondas.
On Mondas, yeah. Before we get into that, I do like the kind of implication in this TARDIS interior is that it feels a lot more lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Where it feels like maybe the Doctor is spending a lot more time there as opposed to going on adventures and stuff.
Yeah, we imply time has passed since we last saw the Doctor in Survival, and yeah, it seems like he seems kind of like having a comfy tea drinking sort of atmosphere.
Wait, since Survival, we're not counting dimensions and time as canon.
We are not.
No, we are. We are.
We are. Okay.
It's definitely
well.
Canon. Definitely canon.
But we didn't see inside the TARDIS on that, so it could already be this. We don't know.
We saw inside the Rani's TARDIS.
Yeah, and we saw whatever the weird room the fourth Doctor was in.
What was that?
I don't know.
I mean, I do know. It was a studio. It was a green screen.
My favorite Dimension Time fact is that Tom Baker wanted the Doctor to turn around and scream with a bullet hole in his cheek when he's warning the other Doctors. And I just imagine if that happened.
What?
He did, and they had to be like, how about, no.
They did give him, like, a little bruise to make him happy.
Yeah, it's apparently in the shape of a question mark.
That's oh, God. So dumb.
Dimensions in Time is buck wild, y'all. It's decently filmed. That camera does not stop moving, and I enjoy that. But it's a mess.
I think what I remember most is Leela wearing some sort of weird, vaguely Native American costume.
I think actually my favorite thing about Dimensions in Time is the fact that Liz Shaw turns up, and she's obviously been snatched while having a few drinks. Because she's like, the Doctor's like cowering from the Rani behind a fence post, and she's like, I'll fucking have him.
Yeah!
And she runs at the Rani. Because the Rani's standing between her and the pub, so it's quite obvious she's down to feet. She's like, right, I can take this bitch.
Unfortunately, Mandy from EastEnders had to come in and interrupt that nonsense.
Not Big Ron.
Not Big Ron.
Yeah, I think I was just baffled by all the EastEnders stuff, and that was half of my
problem. Yeah, I didn't know any of the EastEnders stuff. But hey, that's Dimensions in Time. The Doctor Who movie. What do we want to talk about? I want to say, in addition to the TARDIS looking cool, the CGI being wobbly, I do think the camera angles are pretty good.
Ooh,
throughout.
There's that one shot where the Doctor is walking through the hallway in the
hospital,
and it's twisting.
Yeah.
That's good. There's also a lot of nonsense where the Doctor finds this apparently dilapidated part of the hospital that's just full of broken mirrors and a leaky roof.
And a just a baby doll for no reason.
Yes!
This is a haunted wing.
No, this is the Tim Burton wing. That was donated by director Tim Burton.
This is the wing that you get sent to if you don't have insurance.
Oh, no!
We are in America now.
Too real.
If you don't have the money to pay, you get the haunted wing.
And we leave wires in you.
That's better in that, like, you're still in the hospital, I guess.
Yeah.
That was a straight
to
up
be fair,
out.
They just straight up put him in the morgue first.
Yeah. With he Will wasn't Sasso. Dead.
Oh, yeah, Will Sasso. Living.
Yeah. Will Sasso so much. Why?
I like Will Sasso. I don't know. I think he's fine.
You've said lemons like 8 times, and I feel like you need to explain the thing that you're referencing, because it's lemons. Not immensely popular.
He does like a, I don't know if, I think there were vines at the time, possibly, because this was pre-TikTok. He just does a series of things where just lemons magically appear in his mouth and he spits them out. It's against his will.
Okay.
It's against his will, Sasso.
He just goes, lemons! And then just a lemon in his mouth and he spits out a lemon. And it just becomes like it became like an ongoing thing that he did.
You're not endearing him to me, Joe.
I like him.
In the movie Best in Show, he's someone who knows Christopher Guest's character. And when Christopher Guest takes off to go to the dog show, he says, if you get tired, stop driving. If you get hungry, eat something.
Can we talk about the mishandling of the x-rays? Like I said, I did not watch this movie today. I have watched this movie twice, not recently, but I do remember there was some mishandling of x-rays where, if I'm not remembering wrong, Grace was doing surgery, right, on the doctor, and there was an x-ray where there was two hearts, and it's like, oh, Fitz, probably just a double exposure, and they don't even bother checking anything.
Correct.
That seems malpracticey.
Well, then her boss, like, wants to cover it up, and she quits out of anger. Yeah, you know, quits in a fit of heat.
Imagine lying on the operating table, and suddenly you hear the surgeon go, I seem to be lost. Should I take this probe out, or should I just shove it in a bit more? I mean, I presume if this had gone to series that the next scene would be Grace receiving a letter from the doctor's lawyers, like, suing her for malpractice, but...
I love that the first shot we get of Grace is her at the opera, and she's looking through the opera glasses.
Single tear, and she rolling down.
She pulls away just one single tear.
So, do you remember in, like, Rose, how hard RTD wants to make Rose seem relatable and understandable? And, you know, so she's, like, got a normal job. She lives in a normal situation. And here it's like, Grace, in an opera desk, as a heart surgeon. You know? I'm not saying it's not a good character, but, yeah, it's an interesting take.
I like her okay. I think she has a lot of scenes where she's just being comic, like, what's going on? That's a bit much.
The line she has where she's like, I finally meet the right man, and he's from another planet. And it's at such an inappropriate time. One.
You're having a motorcycle chase. I guess that really turns her on.
And two, it's like, you've made that decision just now, have you? This is the right man for you?
They kiss a total of 3 times.
But can I ask an important question? Who do you think has more chemistry? The Doctor and Grace or the Doctor and Yaz? On screen chemistry.
Master and Chang.
The Master and Chang.
Master and
that's
Chang.
Acceptable.
Shit, that's the right answer. That's the right answer. Yeah.
The Asian child.
Bruce, you're sick.
I will say the Doctor and Yaz have more chemistry, not on purpose.
It's just that they're both, whatever they're both doing, and I don't know what it is, it's compatible.
Who, the Master and Chang?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're both making weird choices, but like on the same frequency of each other.
There are a lot of like little touches that I appreciated that I didn't remember before, but like the Master trying to convince Chang Li that the Doctor is a great criminal. He's like, you ever heard of Genghis Khan? Yeah, what about him? That was him.
I just love the whole like ambulance motorcycle chase where it just cuts back to them in the ambulance just saying the dumbest shit.
This is an ambulance.
This is an ambulance.
Yes, that's more like it.
You want me to kill you?
I genuinely love Eric Roberts in this. Like, he's I remember when seeing this when it first came out, and people were like, oh, well, you know, he's a bit over the top. But, you know, we've had John Sims since, and it's kind of just like, he's fun. He's having fun in the role. It a little bit reminds me of Anthony Anning in The Five Doctors when he goes, I may be seated. You know, it's that kind of vibe all the time.
Yeah, I think what people think of him as over the top, they really remember, like, all everything post I Always Dress for the Occasion, when he just, they overdub his voice and he makes all these sort of CGI facial contortions. That's when it really,
I mean, we're not even going to pretend like that moment isn't the best moment in the whole movie.
Yeah, Dress for the Occasion line is absolutely the best moment.
Okay.
Well, I remember I saw this film back in the 90s. I'd never seen anything relating to Doctor Who before. I think this was the very first thing I ever saw of Doctor Who.
That's crazy.
Fascinating.
Wild.
I remember watching it and getting to that moment where he appears and he's in his Time Lord gear.
Slash Doctor and, Strange cloak.
Yeah.
Is that when you were like, oh, wait, I'm gay?
No. No, I was actually, I saw it and I was like, huh, this might be better if this character was maybe less campy. And then in watching the rest of Doctor Who, I'm like, oh no, he's perfectly in line.
Yes.
That's just who the Master is.
He was getting the right time.
Yeah, no, that's when he became the Master.
And then he kisses Chang Li.
Chang Li, by the way, only has like the best reaction to that of like, well, this dude has promised me money.
Yes.
So yeah. I'm gonna let this happen. Yeah. Like,
there's also just that weird, like, blowjob scene, basically.
A little bit.
Where he just he shoves his head down to look into the, Chang's head down to look into the Eye of Harmony beam thing. And it's just very specifically framed.
Yeah.
Yeah. In watching it this time, there's a whole, like, elder guy and adopted son/boyfriend thing that they've got going on.
Asian child. Bruce, you're sick.
Bruce, you're sick.
Yeah, it's more like inappropriate sexual attention than J&T ever brought to the show.
It was definitely much more prominent to me now than it was when I watched it, you know, when I was however old I was, 14 or whatever.
This is my second time seeing it. I saw it right before we went to Atlanta to see Paul McGann, because I was like, I want to see it before we meet Paul McGann. So
also, Paul McGann gets a lot of shit for the wig that he's in, but honestly, I prefer that to whatever the hell was going on with Sylvester McCoy's hair.
Oh, I like Sylvester McCoy's hair for some reason.
Oh, I don't.
Maybe I don't like the hat.
I kind of like his hair. He's got like a mad professor look.
I miss the question marks.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm having like vague flashes of memories of this movie. I remember the doctor walking through glass.
Yes.
Can we have a conversation about the justification for that? Because I have no recollection of why he was walking through glass.
Vince, it's so fucking thin. It's practically non-existent.
Because the Eye of Harmony was opening and the barriers are breaking down or something.
It's going to suck San Francisco into it and the whole earth and the whole
and that allows
universe.
The doctor to walk through glass. Can other people walk through glass?
Sure.
Or is it just the doctor?
Well, maybe they could have if they tried.
It's that the molecular structure of the planet is breaking down.
So if somebody has a glass table with stuff on it.
I just wonder, like, how many banks got robbed during that time.
I wonder how many people leaned on a window and fell out, you know?
You know what this movie's actually really decent at? Montages. There's a handful of montages where, like, there's things intercut and they jump back and forth and they do weird stuff.
That's true.
That's pretty good. There's an energy to it.
Oddly, a film by a very English director being intercut with the resurrection of a quintessentially English character is somehow incredibly American. Like, that's the kind of thing that you wouldn't see in the actual show. But, like, it feels perfectly fine here.
Yeah, it's very, like, quick edits that you don't normally see.
Why is this movie so obsessed with clocks?
Time, Tony.
Because he's a time traveler.
Because he's a time lord.
I mean, I don't like that it takes so long for Paul McGann to appear. But that, like, the stretch from when he regenerates to, yeah, meeting Rose and
Grace, you mean?
Grace.
Wait, sorry, meeting Grace. And then, you know, the Master and Chang Li. Up until the whole what's the Eye of Harmony doing in the TARDIS, and why is opening it going to destroy the molecular structure, and what's with all the clocks? That's when it kind of goes downhill for me.
I think a lot of the choices in this movie can be chalked up to it's essentially a pilot. Yeah, they're trying to introduce the concept to an American audience who might not know of Doctor Who. So they're trying to say, this is what Doctor Who is in terms of like concepts, but not in terms of necessarily like, this is what Doctor Who is, but more like, okay, so Doctor Who is about time. So we're going to focus on time a lot. And he's an alien, so we're going to make it a little weird. And there's this whole Doctor Who thing, the title of it. So he's going to have this whole big, who am I moment, like Jackie Chan or something.
Can we acknowledge that the Doctor destroys Professor Wagg's career?
No, we can't.
Because surely he does. He has this big thing and then his clock doesn't work. Presumably he ends up destitute and drunk on the street.
They cut back to him so many times.
And I have to request to have that strike from the record.
Well, no, it does work, doesn't it? Don't they? Like, it probably, they rewind time at the end and then everything goes smoothly.
Here's the thing. They cut back to him so many times, like, in the countdown to midnight. And I can't tell if he's having a nervous breakdown or not.
No, he is. He is.
I don't understand what the... There's a lot, actually, that I don't understand about this movie.
What's the temporal orbit?
Yes, what is
the temporal orbit?
So if they went back in time, why is it... Did the clock still... Like, why is it still that time? And how does going back in time with Grace and Chang in the TARDIS regenerate them?
No, the Eye of Harmony did it. The TARDIS did it because the TARDIS was just being cute.
Yeah, the Eye of Harmony is kind of this plot device that does whatever. Because it's like, oh, we need a thing to do the thing. It's the Eye of Harmony. Okay. But how come it didn't? Oh, because the Doctor is half human. That's how we're gonna the Eye of Harmony.
Also, that explanation of like they're fully human, so they can get the Eye of Harmony to open.
It makes no sense.
Okay. Why?
It's Summer's Blood. For those who don't know, that's a Buffy reference in season 5 finale of Buffy. The Summer's Blood is somehow able to close the portal because Buffy is able to close the portal because Dawn is the key. Because Dawn is made of the key, but also Summer's blood, and somehow that makes Buffy the key? It makes no sense.
It's transitive properties.
That's what's happening here, I think. And I don't remember. But that's what it sounds like to me.
I think the most important thing this film actually introduces to Doctor is the idea that you can introduce these big, what should be big, mind-blowing retcons, or whatever you want to call it, and everyone can just ignore it afterwards and pretend it never happened.
Yeah.
There's a comic analogy to that in the story of Flash. At one point, they introduced this like a wizard named Moopy and said that he was the one who gave the Flash his powers, and then it was never referred to again. So anything like that in comics continuity that's just like a one-off that we pretend didn't happen is called a Moopy.
I love that. I adore that.
Okay, so the Eye of Harmony is named Moopy.
Well, officially, there is no canon, and the Eye of Harmony is canon fodder. So it does whatever.
Weird aside for a second, I just want to say that Adam's partner is currently live tweeting just Adam's side of this podcast.
Yes. I'm sorry about that. I just noticed.
No. We need to get Adam to say the weirdest fucking thing. What should Adam say to get him to tweet?
Well, how many times has he already mentioned Master's jizz?
Let's see.
I don't think
at
I
least
have,
twice.
Actually.
No, when you answer the question, you have to restate the question so that people can understand it.
Yes, that's true.
So how do we feel about the Master's jizz?
There's a lot of it.
Probably slimy.
It's all over the place. It's a real bukkake situation.
Sometimes it's acidic, and I don't know if that's like diet-based or...
Also, apparently it can possess you.
And sometimes it comes in the form of a snake.
Snake Cum. The sequel to Snake Dance no one asked
for. Yeah, I'm surprised that Big Finish hasn't done a story where it's actually the Mara that merges with the Master in the TARDIS, and yes, then it's Snake Jizz, the sequel to Snake Dance.
Can you just imagine Peter Davison standing there, just like gritting his teeth as Anthony Ainley hurls cum at him? I mean, that's what you're suggesting.
Yes. No. I don't know.
I think I've read that story somewhere, but I don't think it was officially released by the BBC.
I want to know why there's all this snake imagery and not cat imagery. Mm. We know
well,
that the Master is a cat boy.
We do get some cat imagery. We start on his cat eyes. That's the beginning of the movie episode.
I don't know where the snake imagery comes out of nowhere. Oh, no, no, that's not true. When the master oozes out of the TARDIS, the reflection of a Chinatown sign that shows like a dragon snake hits it and it turns into a snake.
Oh, okay.
Which makes perfect sense.
That's exactly how that would work.
That's canon, baby.
Loose cannon.
Terminator 2 is definitely an influence on this.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That scene where he's talking to the, I don't know, hospital person through the glass is very much just the I'll be back scene from the first Terminator. I just ran out of juice.
I don't need to know that.
That's not a problem that the master has.
Another weird obsession besides goo and clocks. Goo and clocks and feet. This movie is very obsessed with the Doctor's feet. There are many close-ups of both Sylvester McCoy's feet and close-ups of Paul McGann's feet and a whole run of jokes about shoes. He wears that toe tag for so long.
That had to be difficult to get the pants over.
Well, he's a wanderer. It's symbolic. You don't get it, Joe. It's symbolism. It's representative of his constant wandering.
I think someone had a foot fetish.
I mean, that's also a possibility.
And a snake fetish.
This whole movie is just full of fetishes. Do you think someone who made this movie just fucked clocks?
There's something going on with the Clockwork Orange device, too. I mean, that's definitely a kink scenario.
I mean, what's that, what does the master say to Grace? Like, I put it on him, I suspect you know how. Which is like, wow.
Clock fuckers. That's the name of this episode.
I have a real problem with that movie. Time travel doesn't make any sense.
There's a joke about the size doesn't matter. Oh yes, we say that on my planet too.
Well, but see, by the end, the Doctor was a clock blocker.
Another thing I think we should talk about is Grace possessed. That was a good effect. I like the black eyes and the. It was interesting that like the Doctor's POV was like filmed slightly differently, like it was bluer or something, because he has the bluest damn eyes. That's why.
But then, you know, to unpossess Grace, the master has to suck his jizz back out of her.
That is the most uncomfortable. Like, I can't even call it a kiss.
No, yeah.
It's bad.
No, the kiss he gave Chang Li was much nicer.
A lot more chaste. Anything else we need to talk about?
Nope, podcast is over.
Nothing and yet so much.
Where I was in my fandom at this time is that I was reading the New Adventures, and that's kind of when I, you know, got internet access for the first time and met other Doctor Who fans online. And so I was pretty invested in that continuity. And this put an end to it because Virgin Books lost the license and then BBC Books took over with an Eighth Doctor line of books, which at first I was not going to read, but then I got sucked back in at some point. So it marks, you know, it's a very clear demarcation point for me. And like at the time I thought it was okay. You know, I didn't hate it, didn't love it. There were things I didn't like, and which in retrospect seems silly. Like I didn't care for the romance element, being a fan of the asexual Doctor, which, you know, that's a long that's long since.
I'm for an ace Doctor too, so.
Same.
I'm for an ace Doctor.
Ace unless she's a lesbian, because that's what the lesbians deserve.
Yes.
I was just trying to, like, remember where I was at the time and how I felt about this, and then how I felt about the fact that it didn't. I mean, I don't think I was that surprised or bummed out that this particular pilot didn't go to series. Because, you know, there was, to me, yeah, the books were kind of where it was, and I didn't expect the show to come back after this.
How do you think the show would have been if it did get picked up? Because, I mean, I know Big Finish continued, but I don't think it would have, whatever Big Finish did wasn't whatever they were going to do.
Well, considering it would have been on Fox, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so it would have been, like, aired out of order and canceled for not grabbing enough viewers.
I think it would have been kind of like The X-Files, which was contemporary.
Sliders. It would have been like Sliders.
Oh.
Sliders is probably the closest thing.
I watch so much Sliders.
I'm sorry.
I don't even know what Sliders is, but I've heard the title, and I know zero things about it besides the title.
Jerry O'Connor would have been the Ninth Doctor.
It's a TV series about tiny little burgers.
See, now you're making other references I'm not aware of.
Well, I know that, you know, like the plan, like the sort of overarching plan was to have the Doctor like in search of his father. And that's why he mentions a memory of his father in this. I suppose the half human on his mother's side would have maybe come up more, or maybe it would have stayed a mopey.
I think I saw somewhere like from like a Bible or something that basically there was a handful of episodes that they were just going to basically remake, but like modernize.
There's a book called The Nth Doctor that was written by Jean-Marc Lefessier, and it's basically just kind of a compendium of all the random bits and rumors and sort of treatments that were running around at the time, and they were all pretty dumb, if I remember correctly.
Could you imagine if, like, the Doctor being half-human had gotten time to become well-established as a part of canon?
Honestly, I don't like it, but wait, how do I make this sentence make sense? I don't like it more than... Wait, in relation to the timeless child.
If you had to pick between the two.
Yeah, I'm picking the mother being human over the timeless child, even though I don't like either of the ideas.
That's an interesting comparison, because I was not thinking of this in comparison to the timeless child, but I do think of, like, Sylvester McCoy's kind of arc where he's, like, this all-powerful, all-knowing being from time, like, deep in Time Lord history, which I hated. I legit hated that. I think of that in relation to the Timeless Child, because I like the Timeless Child as kind of the opposite of that. Like, I like being the Doctor less special. Well, no, actually, that doesn't make sense. I like being the Doctor less powerful rather than more powerful, because I see the Doctor as the ultimate kind of anti-establishment figure. And I don't think the Doctor should ever be fully in control of things.
Fascinating, because I have felt like the Timeless Child parallels the Seventh Doctor, like, super Time Lord stuff, which has always fascinated me, because we just finished that era, and I love it, and I absolutely hate all of that lore. I'm like, that's a terrible idea. The Doctor doesn't need to be, you know, more special. The Doctor needs to be less special, and that's why I didn't care for the Timeless Child. So it's interesting that you see them as, like, opposite.
But as I was saying it, and saying, as the words less special came to me, I'm like, oh, that doesn't make the Doctor less special, does it? It just makes the Doctor less of an advantage, I guess. But I'm not saying I love the Timeless Child, but my reaction to it was kind of, oh, okay, if that's the direction they're going to go in, I'll see where it goes.
The thing about the Sylvester McCoy stuff is that, of course, on the TV episodes, it's nothing's confirmed. Nothing's even, we say hinted at, but you wouldn't come up with the whole other stuff just from the TV episodes. It's just him being, ooh, look at me, I'm being a bit mysterious, waggle eyebrows. And of course, all of that comes up, it moves into the new adventures in some of the more boring ones, as I'm discovering as I read them, as we do some of them for the Real McCoy. So yeah, so it you know, you don't, you know, the Timeless Child is a definite thing. And then, you know, one of the things about that as well is that Chibnall's gone, right, Timeless Child from another universe, also the Division, and you're like, hang on a second, what, how all these connect, what, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think the difference between, like, the Seventh Doctor and Timeless Child is, like, yeah, the Seventh Doctor had, like, hints of things, but they just wanted to make the Doctor more mysterious. There's this whole thing, like, the Cartmel Master Plan, which I don't think it was a Cartmel Master Plan, it was, I think it was more, what's-his-face, Ghostlight guy.
Mark Plutt.
Because that episode, Ghostlight was going to be Long Barrel, and it was going to explain a lot of stuff, and, like, Cartmel was like, no, we don't want to explain who the Doctor is. We want him to be mysterious. And I think the Timeless Child was like, what if we make the Doctor not mysterious? What if we pull the trigger on that and explain all the shit? Instead of, like, doing vague hints of, like, there may be some, what's up with the Doctor? Instead just went, hey, here's some stuff about the Doctor. Deal with it.
Deal with it.
I think if it had gone, like, a little less far, like, when I saw the Morbius Doctors, I'm like, fuck yeah! my little Spanish heart grew three sizes. But yeah, if they just said, okay, they just established, okay, the Doctor, there were Doctors before what we think of as the first Doctor, and left it at that without quite getting to the actual origin, I would have liked it a lot better. And of course, you know, who knows what the next, is there just one more or two more?
One more.
It's not a two more.
Jesus.
Wouldn't it be amazing if in Jodie's final episode they explained what temporal orbit was?
Oh.
What if that's the whole story? Just, what if they fix all the damage done by flux? If there has been any damage done by flux, who knows, with a temporal orbit? What if she just does that, and then it's like, it's fine.
The end.
I hate the Timeless Child. I don't like the Doctor being half-human on his mother's side thing. But for me, the difference is I like the idea of the Doctor coming from privilege, seeing inequality, and choosing to step down and help other people, as opposed to what the Timeless Child does, which is like make the Doctor a victim.
Yeah, I think so. Did you like the Capaldi stuff?
I did like the Capaldi
stuff. Yeah, I did too.
Like that's listen is really where I like the Doctor to be.
I do think though that the Capaldi stuff is, I mean, it's the culmination of all of that. And I think there's no better time to, like, make way for, like, letting the Doctor be a stand-in for a different type of person than after the Capaldi era.
Mm.
Because it's really, like, a nice end for that arc, almost. Or, like, it's, like, an incredibly thorough exploration of that idea. And it does make sense in, like, an era of Doctor Who where we are making, you know, the Doctor not be this figure that he's been the whole time, of this white man, essentially. Like, it does make sense to shift from that to something else in a period of time where the Doctor is going to be represented by people who don't look like that, who don't come from that privilege necessarily.
In many ways, because Capaldi was a fan, I felt like he was a synthesis of a lot of, certainly a lot of Hartnell, but also, like, if I close my eyes, he sounds like Tom Baker to me. His voice is so similar. So I really, yeah, he kind of, I think, I like that idea, Tony, that he was kind of like the culmination of that vision of the Doctor, and now we have something different.
I'm pretty sure that's something I read from Elizabeth Sandifer and not my own idea, but
I will just say with the Timeless Child thing, I was at Galley, I was at a panel, and I can't remember what the panel was, but somebody talked about it in the audience, and they were talking about how they have adopted children and they were adopted themselves, and it did, you know, they appreciated that, they because it kind of tapped into that, but then they did kind of say, but it hadn't really gone anywhere, so they were kind of they liked it, but they were frustrated by it as well, because which I totally understand. So, and I respect that, I get that, that's, it's not, I don't have that experience, it's not something I can tap into, but I can see how you could. And I've always kind of said it's not really the idea I'm not sold on, it was the execution. Like, you could sell me on it, of course you could, but I just wasn't. And this is a very sensible chat about the Timeless Children and not the TV movie.
Eric Roberts, am I right?
Yeah.
So that's how we get back to the human on my mother's side. So how do we reconcile the Timeless Child with being human on his mother's side?
That's super easy. Everything's made up and canon doesn't matter.
Doctor, whose line is it anyway?
I mean, you want a Watsonian explanation? I'll have to think about it.
This is an imaginary story, aren't they all?
Because we've mentioned the eight Doctor novels, and the first one is written by Terence Dick.
Yeah, I skipped that one.
And yeah, no, just as well, but it does open with the Doctor going, well, that last adventure I had was a load of illogical shit, wasn't it? God, I don't know what that was all about. Anyway, time to have another sequel to State of Decay.
I mean, I think it's just wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey.
Before it's time.
You know what I think? I think alternate universe Doctors. That's what's happening. Isn't the Doctor's mother in one of the RTD finales, like
implied
fan theory or whatever?
That's the theory.
Again, it's one of those things where it's implied, but Davies has said specifically that that was intended to be his mother.
And is she supposed to be whoever the fuck that woman is from the Division?
No, I think it was the woman who raised him, you know, who he saw as his mother. Well, I assume, yeah. But you know, right. Tectuan whatever wasn't a thing at the time, wasn't thought of till later.
So this is how you reconcile it. The his Gallifreyan mother, the one that he knows, is Gallifreyan, but like if we take the Timeless Child into account, then she came from another universe or whatever where her mother was half human, right? That's what we do? That's how we do it?
How would the Doctor know? Because
something clicked in his brain for a half second and he remembered.
I have harmony.
DNA test.
Yeah. DNA test.
You are not the Time Lord.
Turns out the Doctor's 100% that bitch.
Thinking about it, American science fiction at the time, if it was space stuff, it always featured half-human aliens. Like, it was a real thing, wasn't it? Because there's, like, obviously the Spock. But then in Babylon 5, what's her face turns half-human?
You mean Delenn kind of
Delenn, thank you, yeah.
She becomes,
yeah,
like a hybrid.
I wanted to say a hybrid in a Peter Capaldi voice, but I can't do it.
And wasn't there a half-human alien in Alien Resurrection as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I skipped that one.
Alien Resurrection? I like it. No one else does.
No one else does.
Paul McGann's in Alien 3.
Yes, he is.
I don't like that one.
Yeah, I don't love Alien 3. It immediately begins with a terrible idea, and then keeps going.
It really cuts the heart out of Aliens.
Immediately.
I kind of like David Fincher's films, and as its own thing, I kind of like it, but yeah. Not a fun movie.
Eric Roberts, though, huh?
Yeah, Eric Roberts and the snake goop.
Eric Roberts, who was not in an Alien film.
No, but you know what? He was a talking cat.
A talking cat?
Which that is, movie is on brand so for The Master.
Ridiculous.
The Master was a talking cat at one point, so.
When you met Paul McGann, how tall was he?
About the normal...
Probably about as tall as he usually is.
He's only a couple of inches taller than Sylvester McCoy. But my favorite thing is from this movie actually is a publicity photo where McCoy is handing him the key and he looks like a foot taller. So he's obviously standing on a box.
Yeah, I don't think he was particularly tall, was he?
I don't think he was much taller than I was.
I think he was like 5'8 or so.
Yeah,
I was definitely taller. He makes up for it with his wonderful eyes.
Google is saying 5'9".
That could be him lying, though.
Well, it says in the 1990s he had his height officially listed in Spotlight as being 5'10".
Mm. What's the truth, McGann? What's the truth?
Who knows? I think it's time to wrap it up.
Yeah, I was about to say, right. Is there anything else we want to open up to discussion before we go to break and come back for final thoughts?
I don't know. What happened in the movie?
Lots of shit.
I like the, I didn't like the romance at the time, but I like the, the parting words between the doctor and Grace and how, he says, come with me. And she says, no, you come with me. It's another one of those just like little touches that I really like.
I could have done without all the smooching, though. He's not particularly good at it, I just want to say. Am I wrong? Like, he barely does anything. His lips are just, like, there and gone.
In interviews, Paul McGann was very much like, I did not use tongue.
But I remember him saying, I remember there being, like, a making of, or it was either, I don't know if it was an interview that I read or heard, but it, like, Paul McGann expressing, like, surprise. Like, has the doctor never had a snog?
I don't think he has.
Didn't the first doctor have a snog in the Aztec episode or whatever?
They didn't kiss, they just made cocoa for her.
They just got engaged. It was an accident.
Oops, I proposed.
Well, what about the second doctor and Jamie?
They just held hands.
Yeah. It's just a lot of innuendo.
And he does have a daughter, granddaughter. How does Looms fit into all this?
I was going to say, Susan was loomed, so...
Again, this was an idea I kind of thought was cool at the time, but Time Lords aren't born the same way. I mean, they aren't. They don't have reproduction the same way that we do. They're kind of made on... They're made out on some genetic loom. Also, Lungborough kind of... Leela's in Lungborough, right? With her husband, Andred, and it was kind of... I thought it was implied that they were, like, reintroducing sex to Gallifrey. But it's been a long time since I read that book.
I mean, it's a hell of a thing to ask Leela, because, like, could you repopulate this entire planet on your own? Cheers. And can I just point out, they have to use looms because an old lady in a basket cursed them all. I'm not exaggerating.
No.
Genuinely, that's what happens.
Doctor Who.
What, is that not normal?
On that note, let's take an ad break.
We have 30 seconds to describe Thunder Talk.
We got big interviews.
Super red music.
We're proud members of the ESO Network.
Yeah, they're probably going to fire us.
I wouldn't blame them.
We've got jokes.
Adult jokes.
And nerd junk.
Woke nerd junk.
All the woke nerd junk.
Find Thunder Talk on the internet.
And the ESO Network.
Ta-da!
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
8 o'clock.
Sure, do you want to go first?
Final thoughts.
No, I just feel like I already said all my final thoughts.
You don't have a...
All of my thoughts were already final.
You don't have, like, a beautifully worded summary of your... Did you like it?
You know what? Yeah. It's goofy, and it's cheesy, and it's fun to watch. What else do you want?
Pick up for a series. Vince, what are your final thoughts?
Well, you know, it's entertaining. It's not very intelligent. It's not, like, impressively written, but it's fun to watch. It's a good time. But yeah, it's fucking stupid. That's how I remember it. But, you know, a lot of things are fucking stupid and fun to watch. It's one of those things where it's like, if you're in the early 2000s watching random TV in the middle of the day in the summer and there's nothing else to do, and you're just flipping channels because you can't watch YouTube because it doesn't exist yet, and you just come upon like a weird ass matinee movie that's just airing in the middle of the day, and it's like got weird effects and it's got like weird characters and weird things happening and none of it makes sense, but it's, you can't stop watching it. It's that kind of vibe, but it's Doctor Who. To me, this is the Kroll of Doctor Who.
I will say, the Doctor Who TV movie is the work friend who is only your friend because you're like, they're going to say the dumbest shit and it's going to really make this shift go by faster.
Vincent, did you say this was the Kroll of Doctor Who or the Krull of Doctor Who?
The Krull.
The Krull, the movie Krull. I love the movie Krull. But yes, that's exactly my experience with Krull. Until they make a really good fantasy movie, that's okay.
Yeah, the thing is, like, I caught Krull on TV in the early 2000s, and my thought was like, what is this? Because I didn't catch the title. I just caught it like a few minutes after it started, and I didn't check the listing or anything, and I was just watching it, and it's like, these effects are like janky in a really fun way, and the story, I have no idea what the fuck is happening, but a lot of stuff is happening, and it's entertaining, and this Doctor Who pilot movie thing kind of has the same vibe to me, not really in any of the specifics, just in sort of a vague vibe that it gives me, and I find comfort in it.
Strangely, I think I agree with you. And while flipping channels, I think something with Eric Roberts in it I'd always pause on that at least.
So that's kind of the space that this movie inhabits in my mind, and so I don't scrutinize it. Well, I mean, I've scrutinized it a little bit here, but I haven't said that much because, like, I barely remember any of it. But yeah, it's that kind of thing where it's like, I don't care that it doesn't make any sense because I don't expect it to make sense because it's that thing that doesn't need to make sense. It's like, I watched Morbius recently and it made sense. If it hadn't made sense, I wouldn't really have minded. I'm talking about the Sony Marvel movie Morbius. So I was watching that recently and I was just having it on my little portable device at work while I was scanning things. And it was just like, it was on and it was like, this could have been a lot stupider and I wouldn't have minded. So like, it's that kind of thing where it's like, I'm not invested enough to care if it makes sense, but I am entertained enough that I'm not bored. And it's interesting, which is more than I can really say for Morbius. It's not that interesting. Morbius is, and I'm going into a Morbius review here. Morbius is an okay movie. That is all you need to know about Morbius. It's okay. So yeah, those are my final thoughts. Morbius was okay.
All right, Matt, how about you?
This is an oddity in Doctor Who, but it's also an oddity that really informs all of the new series, which, I mean, if you watch the two together, you can definitely tell how much TV evolved and how much better what they wanted to do in this movie would later be done in the TV series, in the rebooted TV series. But it's certainly not a travesty, as some people would have you believe. It's dumb, but it's fun. He's gotten, I think, the least amount of screen time outside of maybe John Hurt. But I love McGann as the Doctor. He's just fantastic.
Oh, he is.
The fact that I love him so much, and I don't generally listen to a whole lot of Big Finish stuff, so the fact that I rate him so highly among Doctors with just this movie says a lot, especially considering he's not even in a third of it. It's definitely a weird lens to watch Doctor Who through. It's taking it and putting it in that very specific Fox 90s sci-fi show aesthetic. And I don't know, it's an interesting kind of experiment. I'm glad that it wasn't picked up necessarily because it allowed the show to remain a BBC thing and paved the way for 2005. But I enjoy it. Like I said, it's dumb. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The special effects are not, they're very dated, but it's well shot, it's well acted, and it's just it's a cool what if that happened to give us one of the best Doctors. So I think all in all, it's a net positive for Doctor Who. And Morbius was fine.
I haven't seen it yet. Felicity.
it's kind of a way station on the way to the new series. Now it occurs to me, like, if this had never happened, would the series have come back in 2005?
I hope so.
Yeah, Russell T. Davis definitely took something from this to inform the new series. And it, you know, it certainly gave Big Finish a life beyond just the past doctors who were participating. And, I mean, got the BBC books started, really. I know Virgin didn't have the rights to regenerate the Doctor. So that would have, I mean, would they have gone on with the Seventh Doctor forever? I don't know. And would I have kept reading them? I also don't know. Last time I was on the Watchathon, it was The Ultimate Foe, you know, the ending of a Trial of a Time Lord. And that was less enjoyable to watch than I remember it being. But this was more. Despite the plot really falling apart and just being a lot of random time stuff, I did find it enjoyable to watch. And like I said, there are a lot of just little touches and lines that I think are very good. So I thumbs up, I guess.
And how did you feel about Morbius?
I did not watch it and do not plan to.
Fair enough. Adam,
do you think we'd have seen Brian in the series if it had never been picked up?
Most assuredly.
No. I think for me, I remember watching it when it arrived on the BBC, and it was really exciting because it was, as a fan, it was my first brand new, not a repeat story that I saw. It was also heavily edited, by the way. Like, people forget that, but it was a couple of minutes shorter because they cut out some of the gun violence and Sylvester screaming. And it was, you know, it was exciting at the time, and I was like, oh, this is great. And, you know, as I've watched more Doctor Who and I've seen more, like, I think, like you've all said, really, I think I'm fond of it. And I think there's more of a fondness for it throughout fandom generally than there was shortly after it aired. And that's partly because it didn't get picked up. But I think people are fond of it now because it didn't get picked up. Because I don't think the series that it came would have necessarily been amazing. I could be wrong. It might have been the best thing ever. But, you know, we'll never know. Just before I watched it, actually, I recently got the Series 26 Blu-ray set. So I thought, I know, I'll watch Survival beforehand. And I'll say something, watching Survival before this really makes you appreciate how Ronan Munro writes a script and structures it. Yeah, no, I am fond of it. But it's very rare now that I'm like, oh, I'll watch that. It's not even, like, my top dumb Doctor Who to watch. I'm just like, yeah, you know, I'll do it for something like this, and we'll eventually cover it on The Real McCoy at some point. I mean, as a Seventh Doctor fan, it's not the most satisfactory ending to the character. I mean, it's lovely to see him on screen. I love the bit where he's running around with the TARDIS console. That feels the most McCoy. And then he just spends a lot of the time lying down, which isn't really that in keeping with the character. But yeah, McGann is great. I mean, it was brilliant to see him when he turned up in Night of the Doctor without the wig, sadly. So yeah, I think ultimately I'm glad it exists, but I am glad it wasn't successful.
I guess it's my turn. Yeah, I think it's fun. I don't think it's great. But, it's always nice to see the Doctor running around doing weird shit. I think Eric Roberts is great as the Master. I enjoy his performance. Cheng Li's not a great actor, but, like, his vibe with the Master is very good. Yeah, I don't know if I'd want this to be its series. I'd be interested to see it if we could go to some alternate universe where it happened. I'd love to see it, but I don't know if I'd enjoy it quite as much. Because, yeah, a lot of this just doesn't make sense. But, like, when it's not making sense, it's still fun. It's not, like, where you're like, I can't follow this. I don't know what's happened. You can follow, like, the emotional beats or whatever. You know, oh, the Doctor's in danger and the Master's being evil, all that, like, it makes enough sense that you can follow it. So, yeah, it's fun. I've seen it twice now, and I didn't dread watching it this time. So, you know, it's fine for what it is. That's my final thoughts. Before we go...
What about me? Do I not get final thoughts?
I thought you were gone. What are your final thoughts, Dalek?
Exterminate!
Great. Love it. Thank you. Before we go, let's do some plugs. Dalek, what are your plugs?
I have no plugs. I am self-sufficient. I do not need to be plugged in.
Cool. Adam, what are your plugs?
You can find me on the Real McCoy podcast, which you can find on iTunes, or you can follow us on Twitter at @real_pod.
Awesome. Felicity?
I don't really have much. Although I was on the Flopcast very recently, I hadn't been for a long time, but that's the podcast my husband and our friend Cornflake co-host, and they just actually reached the 10-year milestone.
Ooh, congrats. We're at like 7.
That's pretty good.
And that's at flopcast.net,
that's
right?
That's at flopcast.net, and it's awesome. Just silly pop culture stuff.
And Matt.
I suck at this part, but I'm going to defer mine, because I don't really have anything going on, to go over and check out my partner's shop witchywishshop.com. And it's on all the socials, like Instagram, at witchywishshop. She makes a ton of like cool, geeky jewelry and stuff, including some Doctor Who stuff. So, yeah.
Awesome. Vince.
I kind of have something to plug, but it's not something that it exists yet fully. I've made a Twitch channel called Washi and Friends. It's not ready. I'm not streaming there yet, but I'm making some stuff and I don't know if it's going to work, and it's probably going to be disastrous, and I'm probably going to do it once and then be like, oh, that was a disaster. I'm never doing that again. But there's a small chance that I might do it and then be like, oh shit, that worked. Maybe I'll do it again. So I don't know. That's the stage that project is at right now, where I'm just sort of doing prep for something that might not work. So subscribe to that, or follow, I guess. Don't subscribe, because I don't know when I'm gonna stream.
I can't wait to maybe or maybe not check that out.
Yeah, you should be on it.
Another podcast that I enjoyed was doing a live Twitch thing, and my brain's too old for that. I just can't cope.
If you liked this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on watchyourassalon.com. You can also find our podcast, our Patreon, and more at linktree.com/watchathon. That's linktr.ee/watchathon. And I want to say special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden! You're welcome.
Your website's mattgolden.xyz, if you forgot.
Yes, it is. Also, but to clarify, my name is Matt Golden.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
No, and it's not Matthew Goldman.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened either.
My brain just completely shut down when I said Matthew Goldman.
I think Matthew Goldman is someone else.
I think so, too. But I'm sure he's cool. Go check him out, too.
Check out MatthewGoldman.xyz. God, I hope that's not a porn site.
It is.
Well, maybe you like that. No, I don't know.
You know what? After I got my URL, I just wanted something cool, and all of the .coms and .nets that I wanted were taken. So I got XYZ, because I'm like, that sounds cool. And then I found out later that .xyz is kind of the domain of crypto people.
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh, God, I've got to find another one now.
Well, shit. Sorry, you're a crypto now.
No.
I just searched for Matthew Goldman, and I'm finding a lot of, like, doctors. Apparently every Matthew Goldman is a doctor of some sort.
My parents will be so disappointed.
I also want to say special thanks to Vince and EL for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thank you, Vince.
Thanks, Vince.
You're welcome.
You can hear more of Vince's music at vinceandel.bandcamp.com, and also that Twitch thing. I mean, I don't know if there's going to be music in the Twitch thing, but Vince will be there.
There's a theme song, but...
After this episode, we're going on hiatus. We're going into the wilderness years. So we're going to take a break.
But it'll be okay.
We'll be back.
Hiatus.
Who's going to write your novelizations?
You may be wondering why I've brought you all here.
Fuck. Abort.
I'm looking forward to watching the writing the watch on Rassilon on the new adventures, particularly the scene in which you both go into cyberspace and take mind-altering drugs.
I look forward to reading it.
I hope that there's one where they get real small.
Me too! I also hope that.
Dimensions of Watchathon of Rassilon.
You also need to write one that explains how we were created in the most ridiculous way possible.
Cursed by an old lady in a basket.
Exactly. But when we do come back, next time we'll be back with The Watchathon of Khan, where we'll be talking about the unaired Star Trek pilot, The Cage.
So we've settled on that name?
That's what it's called for this brief run of bonus pilots.
All right.
I still think The Watchathon of Rathacon is better.
But that just sounds like we're watching the movie. Anyway, there'll be discussion about it on that episode. Until next time. Keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Do we say bye now?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
No?
Everybody say bye.
Have
bye.
A tasteful
bye.
Tuna.
Bye.
Bye.
This is an ambulance.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.